This is a production of Pale Groove Studios. Welcome to NCQ Talk, where a nerd, a Canadian, and a Quaker talk about the intersection of technology and learning. We're still doing our continental conversations, and we're going to France. I have a really neat friend you guys have got to meet. His name is Nadal. Nadal Gessam. Normally, he's in the United Arab Emirates, but right now, he's up in Toulouse, France. And I know you're going to want to talk to him. He's an astrophysicist. Don't be scared by that, okay?
Okay.
But he has been working with online learning for the American University in the Emirates, and he has some thoughts
we
to share
need to
about
introduce you and I don't know what your actual title is.
Okay, so let's go.
Do
all
you
right
need an actual title?
Well, make one up.
I don't know. I can't top nerd and Quaker and Canadian. Maybe we'll add the Arab currently in Europe or something like that.
And you should explain why it is that you are in France right now.
Okay. Want me to tell you right now or later?
Yeah.
Well, I am in, I have this ongoing collaboration. I'm an astrophysicist, which is not directly relevant, but maybe somewhat to the discussion we will be having later on online learning with me and in my university. In any case, I'm an astrophysicist, and every year I spend about a month here in Toulouse, France, where there is one of the main French and European centers of space research, astrophysics, satellites, things like this. And so I spend some time furthering my research and my work, my scientific work. Basically, most of the rest of the year I spend on my teaching, some research, service, of course, and some other intellectual interests, because I have all kinds of interests.
And during the month that you're in France, do you get to also have a family holiday during that time?
Usually what happens is either my family joins me here in France or in Paris or somewhere for the first week or two. Then I leave them, they go home in Algeria, and I come to Toulouse to work. Or, as in the past couple of years, for family reasons, my wife and the kids have been going directly to Algeria. So I come here, do my research, and then join them over there for a real holiday vacation, which lasts for me about 3 weeks. And then we all go back together to the Emirates, where I resume my work.
Wonderful. Well, Nadal and I met, I don't think Chris, and I'm not sure if Dan knows this, we met virtually probably 5 years ago when he was a guest lecturer for one of our MVCR courses through the University of Illinois. And it was good to reconnect a few months ago when he did a webinar on, now I got to think of what the topic was.
It was the American universities in the Middle East.
That's right. But a very small part of that, we began to touch on the topic of online learning, and Nadal graciously agreed to step over to our podcasting side to follow up on that. So we want to know, what is the state of online learning in your university, and where do you see this going?
Well, there are several dimensions to this online learning involvement of mine at the university. I can talk about my own work and interest in online learning and various activities and efforts. I can talk about what the university has done or how it looks at online learning. We could talk a little bit about the state of online learning, whether full online learning or hybrid learning in my region, in the Gulf, in the Arab world more generally. Some of the difficulties. This, funnily enough, connects to that long ago guest lecture that I gave, which was, I think, titled something like, Can Online Learning Truly Be Global? And in that, right. I sort of discussed and this was 5 years ago, as you recall, and we talked about some of the difficulties and some of the encouraging signs. So I think it's a good idea to look at what has been happening in the meantime and what is the situation right now. So you want to ask me something specific?
Okay, yeah. Well, let's start. Then I'm going to start with the broadest picture. What's happening in the Arab world with online learning right now? And then we'll kind of downsize to what you're working on.
Okay, one of the issues that was hindering the progress and the burgeoning of online learning in the Arab world was connectivity and speed. This was one of the problems that I highlighted 5 years ago. Now, that doesn't seem to be a problem anymore. I think most universities, almost everybody interested in education, technology, learning, has overcome that problem. Although we still have some difficulties with bandwidth because there are more and more people connecting and because there is so much more stuff to download and people are downloading all the time. And so it is sometimes hard to have a fast connection, sustained, to do real sort of voice conversations like what we're doing right now, or to have video exchanges, things like this. But as far as online learning is concerned, that problem does not exist anymore. The other problem that I highlighted 5 years ago was the question of language. And I said then that English, having become the dominant language of the internet and even of learning, this connects to that webinar that I gave a couple of months ago on the American universities in the Arab world. English has become definitely the language of exchange, communication, technology, and even higher learning. That has hindered to some extent the development of online learning because, as you can imagine, English is barely the second language in the Arab world, at least in some regions. In some regions, French is, and English is then maybe the third language. And so it is not so easy to have students use the online learning tools, WebCT, Blackboard, the resources that are that exist out there, text, animation, etc. There is, of course, a growing wealth of information and resources in other languages, including in Arabic. But the tools for online learning, to my knowledge, are by a very large extent only existing in English. So online learning, therefore, in the Arab world in general, in the broadest picture, is mostly synonymous to instructional technology, meaning you use the internet as a resource, as a backup, another avenue or dimension for learning for the students, but it is not the platform of conducting a course. Of course, there are a lot of exceptions to this large picture that I just depicted, and there are many universities where people are attempting to conduct either hybrid learning, where there are platforms, students are signed up to a specific course, and they go to the internet or to WebCT, Blackboard, and nowadays Moodle, etc., and continue their learning. This is the sort of broadening of the classroom walls. And thirdly, there are now quite a few, not, I shouldn't say quite a few, but a few, a growing but very small number of fully online courses that have emerged and developed in the scene, but they are really dots in the large landscape.
And are you teaching one of those fully online courses?
Yeah, this year was the second offering of a fully online course that I developed and gave on astronomy. The reason why I chose astronomy, I teach astronomy and physics. I teach a lot more physics than astronomy. Usually it's a ratio of about 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 physics to astronomy courses and time and hours that I devote to that. But I chose to develop a course in astronomy because it is, at least the course that I teach, is non-technical, highly visual, as you can imagine. There's a lot of images, a lot of animations. It is very descriptive. It relies on text. It relies on reading and writing a lot more than, you know, equations and solving and problems and experiments in the lab, etc., etc. So in the first years, of my interest, I started with hybrid courses, and I tried to make them as well in physics as well as in astronomy. So I started to develop some platforms or some added dimensions in at least some of the courses, conceptual physics, electricity and magnetism, etc., where I use either I would enroll the students on my WebCT account, or I, in the very beginning when I didn't have even WebCT at the university, I signed up for the, I don't know if it exists anymore, the 60-day free trial period on Blackboard, where I uploaded material, and then I signed up students, and they would go there for 2 months and usually and use it a little bit, ask some questions, find some material, post it for each other, etc. Then I started to use Discovery School to set up online quizzes, and I made the students use them as practice, and they enjoyed that because it gave them a chance to go and sort of do a quiz without having to be graded officially or without having the grade counting. And then I moved to the fully online version, which I gave the first time around was just about a year and a half ago, and the second offering was this past semester.
I'm pausing so that Dan has a chance to jump in, but I have another question if Dan doesn't.
Well, I'm just fascinated by what you're describing.
I know what you're thinking, Dan. You're thinking, oh my gosh, what a great selection of a course, because he thought through the text and the imagery and really fit the content to the technology.
Yeah, that
and not the technology to the content.
Exactly. That just and my question related to that is, how did you learn to think that way?
I learned at ION, because one of the things that Susan seems to have forgotten is I was a student of hers a couple of years ago.
All right, Susan.
So she mention that I was a guest lecturer when she was taking a course. This was 5 years ago. Then I took another course at ION, the Illinois Online Network, because I have been taking the, what is it called, the Master Certificate of Online Teaching for the past years. And of course, with all my responsibilities and involvements, I can only take about one course a year or so. And so it has taken me about 5 years to just about complete it. I still have to do the practicum. But in any case, so I have been well trained, let's say, by some very talented people, Susan among them. And so I am, of course, fully aware of the instructional design, the student assessment techniques, and everything that goes with the correct way of teaching online, not just, you know, jump in and sign some students and, you know, start posting some material.
What have been some of the responses of the students? Has this been a positive experience for them? What kind of feedback are you getting from them?
Yeah, that's a very interesting issue. At first, I was concerned that the students would not be fully ready. We had this preconception that the students would not be able to engage into online learning because we believe that students, at least in our university, even though they are fully fluent in English, it's an American university, etc., but their language skills are maybe, or that's what we used to think, not up to the level of conducting a complete course online, having to read so much and write and go through the material on their own, post answers, you know, the discussion questions and the summary, synthesis, things, etc. I was very surprised by what I thought would be some difficulties, which turned out not to be difficulties, and some of the things that I had not quite foreseen, which turned out to be somewhat more major issues. The students, I realized, were even more at ease online than they were on ground. They were more comfortable, they interacted so well, it was absolutely like second nature to them. And of course I realized that they were more than, not just comfortable, but fluent with everything internetese. They would be able to download things, they would be able to find material I had never seen on the internet, and share it with me and with the other students. That was fantastic. Now, what was two issues that became a problem? One was students, at least in the beginning, the first several weeks, I would say maybe the first month, maybe first, second month, students had difficulty conducting the learning on their own. And this, of course, is no surprise for anybody who has taught online, at least for, you know, 18-year-old, 20-year-old students. And it was difficult for them to find themselves having to go read the material, answer questions, comment on some other students, respond, write a synthesis at the end of every module and things like this. And they started to blame the instructor. They started to blame, you know, the format, and this is not working, this is ridiculous, how am I supposed to know this or figure it out on my own, etc. But then they got into it, and by the end of it, most of them, at least those who've ended up passing the course, because those who did not pass the course for academic reasons, not online reasons, those basically continued to be negative and try to find excuses. But the majority of them, by the end, said, this is not only a fantastic tool, thank you so much for giving me a chance to learn how to learn on my own. Now, the second issue that was a problem, at least the very first time last year, and it was a major concern of mine, this year it was much less of a concern or a problem because I handled it from the beginning and kept banging on it, that was the question of plagiarism. There is, of course, so much information on the internet, so any question you ask them, they would just go in on the internet and within a few seconds they would find the full answer to that question. And they would just, you know, cut and paste or copy and paste, and voila, you know, fantastic answer. Of course, within a few lines, you realize that this is not their writing, this is not their understanding, and so you start telling them, listen, this is not right because it's not going to serve you since the exam is going to come and the exam is not online, and so you know, you have to try and answer the question, and even if you get it wrong, and you have to overcome that reticence of being afraid of answering the question wrong. So last year it was a serious problem where I was having plagiarism all the time, and this year it was maybe 10 times less.
Well, of course, this year you also knew to anticipate it, so I'm sure you were able to head that off in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other than language, are there any other cultural issues that you've had to face as you try to get your young students to embrace this new way of learning?
Not really cultural, but maybe educational. We, in our region, we think that the elementary and secondary school system is still very much a traditional system where the teacher teaches and the student receives. And so the students have gotten shaped into that mode of learning. And so it is very hard for them to come to the university and discover that they really have to do some more learning, that what they receive, even in the classroom, is not the full knowledge. For example, one of the things that I started to do a couple of years ago and emphasized it more this year, even in the astronomy course, is to assign books to read, not just the textbook, but real books. In astronomy, I assign a novel, a science fiction novel, and the students find it like, you know, you can't force me to read a book, you can't have me go and check this and read that and complete my information. They will come very often and say, you know, there was a question on the quiz or on the midterm that you had not covered, at least not explicitly, and I'll say,
oh,
yeah.
How dare you!
Yeah, and you tell them, well, welcome to the real world. I mean, you have to learn to cover the information. You have to listen to what is between my statements and read between the lines of my slides or my material that I posted, etc. And since you know so well how to use the internet, then why don't you use the internet and use it to learn, not just to copy information?
Yeah, clearly that would happen here in the U.S. as well. Those are, I guess, just conditions of being millennials or net geners and learning, as you said, learning how to learn and to take responsibility for that. Yeah. In the real world, we don't get to ask our bosses, is this going to be on the test?
And the other thing that we find in the real world, too, you mentioned the students trying to figure out how they can find the information and then use it appropriately, is that sometimes the problems that we need to solve are a little ambiguous. You know, there isn't a clear-cut answer necessarily. And so it sounds like you were giving your students an opportunity to work with maybe uncommon material, like a novel rather than a textbook, which you might expect, and having them then synthesize all of that information to address a problem that you may have given them in the course.
Yeah, absolutely true, and it's a major challenge for the instructor as well as for the students, and the students don't like it. In fact, in online teaching, in my online section, where I use almost verbatim the ION format, as you know, at the end of the module, they have to write a summary and synthesis. And at the beginning, they say, what is synthesis? You know, and for them, it's, oh, so I have to, you know, put it together on my own. And I say, yeah, you have to tell me what you learned, what you understood, what you found to be useful, how you connected it with previous information, how this ties in with maybe other courses and things like this. And for them, it's, you know, they would just, of course, it's much easier to just repeat what you heard from the instructor instead of having to say what you think, what you have learned, what you see coming, what you understood, or what you think you haven't quite understood yet. It's a major intellectual or mental task, and students have to be trained to get into that frame of mind or that mode of learning.
Now, do you have other colleagues that are starting to design online courses as well? And then do they share your approach or commitment to this pedagogical style or philosophy, if you will?
I haven't had anybody at my university teach a fully online course yet. I was approached by the School of Engineering that wanted to develop some fully online courses for their master's degree program because they have students that come in. Basically, their format is, it's pretty much a distance learning format where the students who come in from different cities are brought in over the weekend for sort of intensive learning, and then they are given material and they have to go and work on them during the week on their own. And they started to think that maybe an online version, a fully online version, would be more feasible or more amenable because it would be day to day instead of week to week. So I was approached, and I believe they are developing it, but there is no fully online course other than my astronomy course at the university. However, there are dozens of colleagues who have hybrid versions of their courses, and some of them have uploaded or taken material from e-books or cartridges, etc., and supplemented their own courses. Some have developed their own things or uploaded their slides or their Word documents, lecture notes, etc. I think basically my colleagues have not been convinced, even after my experiment, and I can tell you something else about my experiment in a moment, have not been convinced that the students can learn as much fully online as they would on ground, and they would bring up all kinds of issues like, but how do you make sure that the students are really answering their questions on their own? How do you make sure that the students have really read this material or that, etc., etc.? Now, the issue that I wanted to mention is that last year when I got the green light to do the fully online course, I had to write a proposal and convince my administrators, the dean and the higher administration. And I wrote a very detailed proposal with a typical course lesson or module, the objectives, the format, how the quizzes would be conducted. I even mentioned the whole orientation and how people would be trained gradually into the online format for the first week or so, etc., etc. But one thing that basically, I think, allowed me to win them over is I told them that all my students online would take exactly the same courses, the same exams at the same time in the same place as the students who were taking the same course on ground. And so if there was any risk, it would be seen at the end. And if the results showed that students really were not learning, then the experiment could be discontinued in the future or something like that. It was funny that in terms of achievement, in terms of performance, last year, my online students who would never see me, I would not even allow them to come to my office, did better than the on-ground section. But in their evaluation, at least the few angry ones tried to sort of shoot me down, saying, this is a terrible format, and this instructor is very hard. And I knew that it had to do with the plagiarism issue, because I kept being very, very harsh on this. This year, my online student did somewhat less or not as well as the on-ground section, but in terms of their response at the end of the semester, the reviews were pretty much glowing. So I think the administration is now convinced that this format works. There is no serious problem with it, that students basically in terms of performance and in terms of satisfaction feedback at the end of the semester are saying this is okay.
Well, good for you.
What a wonderful experiment, and some great results.
Yeah,
it's been working quite well. Yeah.
Seldom do we have to actually have the opportunity to compare two classes in that manner. How close is Toulouse to Paris?
700 kilometers southwest of Paris.
So it would take us, what, 4 or 5 hours to drive?
No, more than that, maybe 6-7 hours.
Well, the way you drive, Susan, maybe, yeah.
in miles. 450 miles, Susan.
Oh, okay, that's more like 10 hours. No. Well, I want to get there while we're still visiting.
It depends. In Europe, it's only 6 or 7 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
You all drive faster.
You get the best economy if you're driving at about 100 kilometers an hour in fifth gear.
Okay, so that's 7 hours nonstop.
Okay, well, we're probably going to wrap up our visit with you so that I can get on to Paris. Do a little sightseeing, you know, before we close out. But we appreciate you taking the time with us. That we're enjoying our continental conversations.
It's been my pleasure, Susan and Dan and Chris. And I look forward to listening to other podcasts. I listened to the previous two just earlier today, and I think this is very valuable to see how things are going around the world. It, as I said earlier, it ties into my earlier question of 5 years ago: can online learning truly be global?
Right, and
well, and you have contributed to that discussion and shown us that at least in your corner of the world, you're adding a significant piece to making it global, and so that's exciting for us to be able to hear that today.
Well, all the pleasure is mine. Thanks.
Well, that was quite a trip, and Susan, while you're headed up to Paris, I'm going to head back to West Chicago, I guess. Are you really going to Paris?
I may as well. I'm so close.
Toulouse, it's only 7 hours. Of course, I'm sure you can cut it down to 5. We want to hear from you, and I'm sure you want to talk some more with Nidal Gesum and discuss some of the issues that he raised and share some of the stories that you've got about how you're trying to make your dent in the global online learning scene. So you can call us and leave a phone message for us at 1-800-609-9006. Extension 8055, or you can email us at info@ncqtalk.com, and of course go to Learning Times and post in the discussion forum there, learningtimes.org, and we'd love to hear more from you, and Nidal will join in on the conversation as well.
NCQ Talk is brought to you by Pale Groove Studios in partnership with the Learning Times Network.